Hello and welcome to Android Developers Backstage. I'm Chet Haas from the Android Toolkit team.
Hello, I'm Yid from the Android UI Toolkit team.
And as a guest today, we have...
I'm Chris Craik from the Android Toolkit team.
Yeah, so then we'll transition to what you're working on now. So one of the reasons for us to hand things over to the Skia team to render was we felt like we had sort of reached the end of the path, if you will, in terms of what we wanted to do to the render, and now they do essentially what we were doing, but more so some of the corner cases they now handle better, excellent performance optimizations, and they continue to work on it. And in the meantime, we have other areas in Android that we would like to speed up, such as?
Well, so such as basically lots of components of the UI Toolkit Java side. So basically all of the renderer is sort of the latter half of the drawing pipeline. And we got and through all of those releases that I talked about, we got through a lot of big bursty chunks of work that would just happen at random times or seemingly random times where you would say upload a bitmap, rasterize a path, tessellate a shadow, redirect to an off-screen rendering buffer. All of these things that are now just completely gone or completely optimized away to the point that they no longer impact your frame time. So the render thread is actually in an incredibly healthy place as far as stable performance goes. And that's kind of one of the reasons why I switched over first to working on Recycler View and working on the Recycler View prefetch feature.
So what does prefetch mean for Recycler View?
It means fetching before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Before when?
Uh-huh. It's just prefetch. Just means fetching.
So does it
before.
Mean I see more ads on my phone?
So prefetch it basically takes some of the simplicity of Recycler View and takes away some of the laziness. So the way that that Recycler View works is it tries to be incredibly lazy to save memory and for performance. So instead of, say, scroll view, inflating every single item that you have inside of it, displaying them all at once, leaving them all attached to the rendering hierarchy, the primary feature of Recycler View is recycling. And so what Recycler View will do is only create as much content as you need on the screen, and then as you scroll, it will lazily say, oh, a new view is needed, let's create it if we need to, bind it, lay it out, attach it. Okay, good, it's fine, it's good to go. The problem is, I just listed a lot of very significant stages to the view pipeline, which is creating item views, binding them, laying them out, and attaching them, and all of those can be pretty significant. So what you would see in practice is, as the Recycler View user use case would get more complex, these bursts of work of a new item coming on screen would get long, sometimes, you know, tens of milliseconds or more. And if you have something that's 10 milliseconds in the middle of your scroll, that's basically a guarantee that you're going to drop a frame and that you're going to jank. And so as part of the Recycler View prefetch, What we worked on was extracting the biggest parts of those, the create and bind, and just pulling those entirely out of the frame. Like I was talking before about how if you're wanting to do a significant amount of work inside your UI frame, one thing that you can do really simply is just post a runnable instead. If this is something asynchronous, if you're talking to your ad service and saying, hey, I showed this thing, or whatever you're doing as part of your view code, if you can post it so that it happens at the end of your frame, you're running in parallel with the render thread and you're getting parallelism
This is not like that, right? Because when Recycler View needs to lay out a view, it needs to lay out a view. It cannot postpone.
That is the fun and tricky part of Recycler View. So that's why this is that all of this work is done incredibly lazily. It's just at the last possible moment, Recycler View says, oh, I scrolled one pixel, there's one pixel of this new view that's coming on screen, I need it right now. Sorry, I didn't ask for it earlier. And so the prefetch project was all about getting that request earlier. And so what we do instead now is we say, as Recycler View scrolls, it will continuously ping the layout manager and say, hey, what's the next view that's coming up? What type
of
view is that?
We know the direction that it's scrolling. It's not randomly sort of saying, hey, what are
yes.
items in the universe? But we actually know the direction
yeah.
that
so
it's
we,
going
so
to go.
Like, and so the default layout managers, you know, will all respond to this question of just like, hey, I'm scrolling in this direction. Do you have any views in that direction? They'll say, oh, I happen to have a view in that direction. Here's the information about it. And then what Recycler View can do is it can say, post a runnable from the middle of its frame, and then... within that runnable, look and see, okay, well, what work needs to be done to get the very next row of views on screen? Is it any create? Is it any bind? And then it will also even, like, look at how much time it typically takes for that view type to be created, to be bound, and it will say, do I have enough time to do this? Oh, maybe I only have enough time for the create. And it will prefetch those things as early as possible. So if you have a big bursty frame, say maybe a new view coming on screen is expensive to begin with, maybe you're doing expensive layout, it'll try and prefetch the next one, but it'll say, ah, not this frame, don't have time. But what's really nice about scrolling is that at 60 frames a second, you're probably scrolling several frames before a new item comes on. So you have a lot of opportunity. You can break that up into separate stages of, say, prefetching the create, prefetching the bind, or if it's a grid, for example, prefetching each one of the items in the next row.
So is that something that we do? Do we break it up into more granular work, or is that in the API so app developers?
So it's done by default in the layout managers.
I see.
The one big thing that I'd like to call out here is that if you have a custom layout manager, please make sure you implement the prefetch APIs, because it makes a huge difference. If you're using one of the default layout managers or extending from them, you're probably totally fine not to worry about it. But what that does is that tells RecyclerView, here are the next ones. So say, for example, if you have a linear layout manager that's just one item at a time, it'll prefetch one item. If it's grid, it will prefetch the entire row, whatever's coming up. And in the more complex case, if you have nested recycler views, we even accommodate that. So if you have a new recycler view coming on screen, say you have a 2D scrolling case like Play Store or whatever, the new row that's coming on screen can prefetch individual items within it, even though it's not even like ready yet, because we will bind it. We will start poking into the internals, say, I know there's a recycler view in this item view. Let me start prefetching its items.
So it seems like that is one of those situations where the next item that you want to prefetch may be really, really expensive. It certainly seems possible you'll find yourself in a situation, or we will, the toolkit, mm-hmm. where we have started the bind and create process, and we're going to flip past that frame boundary ourselves, right? So we try to do a prefetch so that it's available in the next frame, and we end up just blowing past the frame boundary.
Yeah,
right?
So what we do to avoid that is we actually time every single create and bind that RecyclerView ever does, and we have a running average that we have for both create and bind. And so what we can do is we can say, okay, well, I know when my last vSync was, I know when my next vSync is, how much time do I have? Can I fit the next thing in there, with some margin for error? And so we actively avoid exactly that problem, because very often you will have a varying amount of space after your UI thread frame is done. One thing that we will still do is we know, well, if you're scrolling so fast that this is going to come on screen next frame anyway, we're just going to start it now, because right. there's no point in putting it off.
So this is still all happening on the main thread.
Yeah, this is all happening on the main thread. It's very difficult to start running arbitrary app code on a thread that it doesn't expect. So we don't try and do that. If you have a really advanced use case, you can poke into async layout inflator, where you can inflate views on a background thread and use those. And that's an API that we provide for very advanced use cases. But in the large majority of cases, you don't need that.
So what are the numbers? Like, how much does this prefetch help?
This can help. Like, I think in Gmail it was like 25% of Whoa. Frame time, of UI thread frame time. And then I was looking at other apps, it was like up to like 75%, because if you're doing, if you think about like how much work is going on for the scroll, basically all that we're doing is we're calling every single view, we're telling it, hey, offset by this much. I mean, there's a little bit of gesture resolution, whatever, but it's pretty trivial amounts of code. In the grand scheme of things, the big significant thing is actually this amount that you're prefetching. And that's how, you know, in some apps you can get up to 75% or whatnot in prefetch work saved, because everything that's significant is being entirely pulled out of the frame to guarantee that we're staying within that 60 millisecond time frame.
So this is where you get the big benefit, as we were talking before about the render thread, like that. If you
yes.
rewind the podcast several minutes, it was nice to be able to run some of these specific animations on the render thread, but now we're seeing the really big payoff where we can run significant amount of really required work on the UI thread early
yes.
and in parallel with render thread.
Yes,
so.
And because back in the days before Lollipop, you would see see a UI thread that would maybe go to sleep for 2 milliseconds on a good frame before it came back awake. And granted, devices were slower at those times anyway,
yeah.
But nowadays, you see the UI thread potentially idle for 12 milliseconds. And that's
yeah.
a huge amount of time to be able to do this kind of work early.
Cool. Okay, so then there was prefetch. Oh, there's an article that mentions the API, mm-hmm. Talks about more of the details of how this works and what app developers need to do in the non-default cases. Mm-hmm. So we'll put that in the show notes. And then did this lead to the pre-computed tech stuff as well?
So I mean, there was
like a general effort to like off-thread stuff and do stuff eagerly.
So one place where this didn't help was text layout. So we don't actually prefetch layout in these cases. We can. It would require some pretty significant changes to recycler view. But what we recognized was the biggest cost sort of remaining in recycler view is text layout. If you have, say, a social media post scrolling on screen with three paragraphs of text, that's a huge amount of text to have to lay out all at once. And even if we tried to pull that into a gap, that wouldn't be enough. We'd have to somehow break that apart. And that's not really something that we can easily do without like significant platform changes. So instead, the text team worked on implementing this pre-computed text API where you can say, here's some text. I want you to create basically do all of the layout work in advance. And this can be done on any thread. Now some of this is kind of tricky. You have to like know what text size you're going into. The easiest way to use this is to just like to copy out the parameters from a text view that you've already inflated, that you've already set all the properties of, and use that to start doing that work. Now that's a little bit tricky because, well, your UI code is usually pretty separate from your like say asynchronous loading code that might be completely separate from that. It's very weird and difficult and kind of abstraction breaking to have your UI inject information back into, say, your repository layer or whatever is loading asynchronously. So instead, the API that was added very shortly thereafter and is now in, you know, is now in Android X and support lib28 is...
So it was P platform changes and then shortly thereafter added to Android X.
Yes. Yep. Yes. So is the pre-computed text APIs specifically for app compat text view. Yep. So app compat text view has an API to take a future. And what pre-computed text can do is create a future based upon a text view. So what you do is you take a text view, you say start computing the text for this text view in your bind code, and then you just in layout, much later, you block on that future and you wait for that to be done. Now, because of the recycler view prefetching stuff that we talked about before, all of this, all of the bind work will generally happen several frames in advance. So you may have, you know, 100 milliseconds before the text view that you've already bound comes on screen. So that's a huge amount of time to do all of this pre-computed text work on the background thread. And like measurements I was doing was about 95% of the work of text view, like all of the layout work and everything gets pulled to this background thread. So it's a massive improvement for UI performance if you use this. Now, it's not something that everybody needs to use. If you just have a single line of text, it's not that important, but it is a really useful tool for people that have, you know, paragraphs
views. If it's a text-heavy feed, if you're in this recycler view situation where you want to take advantage of this, this would be a good area. Okay, so you said if developers do this, so are there things that they need to do? So for the prefetch stuff we talked about before, a lot of that is automatic if you're using the default layout managers. What about the pre-computer text stuff?
Pre-computer text we couldn't make automatic. Yep. It would be very dangerous to do so because there's no clear signal from the text view that it is done binding and that it is that no one will touch any of its properties between the time that you start and the time that you lay out. So we have a more explicit API with the pre-computed text compat and the app compat text view. And there's a blog post on there that I'm sure you put in the
show notes. Yeah, we'll link to that. Also, I should call out Sego for doing a lot of the gnarly work of actually making this thing work on the text
and,
team.
And this has just like been the most significant change since Recycler View Prefetch for UI performance is this ability to do this.
Yeah, it's funny. Like it is a small portion of what the toolkit team does and the framework APIs provide, but text is obviously huge, right? Most of a UI is text, and it turns out the text is the most important thing overall from all of that stuff that you see in a typical UI. So every little bit of performance that we can work on there has huge benefits. And the ability to off-thread this for the first time without going in and doing really nasty things under the covers with static layout, I think is pretty important. So we talked about prefetch. This was part of Chris stepping up the stack from graphics and looking at systematic problems in Android. The other thing that you dove into in the last while here was paging.
Yes. So the way that I got into paging was kind of interesting. Yeet had just announced the Room library at I/O 2017, And a lot of the early feedback was, this is great, I need pagination. I can't use a database without pagination. And at the same time, I had been talking to Yeet about like next things that we wanted to do for Recycler View, things that we thought Recycler View wasn't doing well enough. And actually, the history of pagination on Android is a little spotty and awkward. The original cursor APIs in Android 1.0 have a lot of drawbacks to them. There were a lot of inefficiencies in the way that you'd use them because they were really optimizing for memory over everything else. They were expecting you to not turn everything into POJOs, but just leave it in the cursor, bind directly from the cursor into Android views. And this works okay until you scroll long enough until you have a you have to refetch from the database blockingly on the UI thread. And you can kind of work around this. Recycler View added, what was it called? The async... what was the Recycler View added the API for asynchronously loading data.
Oh, yeah, async list util.
Async list util, yeah. So async list util was a very focused API on one particular sort of paging, but it was incredibly limited. We looked at that as maybe a way to support room and pagination together, but the real downside of that is that the way that it works really requires you to fit into its paging model. You really want to use positions. You really want updates to work in this one particular way. And so on and so on. And it really didn't have a lot of flexibility for some of the sort of UX that we wanted to be able to support.
Yeah. I mean, the interesting thing about the paging problem is we have these cursor APIs from like Android 1 that look like it solves the problem. And then you look underneath, it actually doesn't solve the problem at all. It just like defers the problem, hoping that it will not happen. For Recycler View, I tried to solve this with async list util. It was like, We know cursor has this one problem where if it ever needs to fetch again, it's really slow. So just make sure it doesn't happen. And while we're designing Room, we knew that cursor was a bad solution and we didn't have time to do a better solution. And we're basically like, no solution. Sorry, people.
So the real solution is just to have a very small database and then you can get it all the first try.
Yeah, I told them don't have too many users. You don't need too many users.
Not too many users, not too much data. Just, I mean, people don't want... you know, to be tracked and have too much information about them anyway. So just limit it and then you're fine.
Right? No, but turns out it didn't work.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Okay. Big surprise.
Okay. So then the real fix was?
So we started looking at like, okay, how do we actually want, how do we want paging to actually work? Because this is kind of an interesting problem from the perspective of Recycler View as well. If you think about Recycler View paging from the perspective of a really simple app, you can do things like, okay, I really just want simple paging. Okay, when I'll use a scroll listener. When I get to the end, I'll like fetch from my network. I'll add it to the bottom, and like that's kind of enough, right? And while that can work right out of the box for a lot of simple cases, there are a lot of complex cases that are really important to support, especially with databases. Things like an update strategy. So what happens if you have a paged list, if you have some paginated source and you want to update it to a new version? You have to have some strategy for that. What if you want to support different UX? So one type of UX that apps have been experimenting with recently is like placeholders, and this is especially important if you use scroll bars. Things like basically adding placeholder items that have like a fake little grayed out user icon and like fake text on them while content is still coming from over the network, that kind of thing, so that your scroll bar is always correct and the user never hits a bump, waits, scroll, hit a bump, waits, to avoid that kind of problem. And there are lots of these kind of little tricks. And so we started recognizing like, okay, we kind of need to solve this more generally for the database. And that's kind of how the project started. So we went about implementing a paginated source that basically follows the model of an observable list. Mm-hmm. So if you're familiar with Live Data or RX, it's very easy to have, and especially since the Life Cycles release, it's a very common pattern to say have the to be observing something that the repository is handling. So the repository says, here is my data, your view, your fragment or whatnot that has Life Cycle will say, I want to start observing this while I'm around and stop observing when I'm not. And that can be really easy if it's a single item. You just say, oh, okay, well, in my observer, like I register an observer with Lifecycle and I say, whenever new data comes in, plop it into this view. We really love that pattern. That's a really cool pattern. And that's basically how Room works. for everyone that uses it. But the problem is, well, what about incomplete data? What about paginated data? We really want something that looks like that, that works very similar to that. And that's how we came up with the idea of page list and data source and all of the paging library.
Yeah. So now we give you, instead of returning a list of users, we return you a page list of users, which still implements lists,
yeah,
right?
It's still a list. It just has some interesting quirks that you need to be aware of. It's a self-loading list. So over time, as you access values and you tell it to load, more things will be added to it dynamically.
I like the idea of a self-loading list. Like if it's a list of friends, does that mean I get friends for free? I don't have to find them anymore.
They just need to scroll. You have to scroll to get more friends.
If only I had known that as a lonely child. So at the same time, you also fixed some of the fundamental problems that you had come across in Cursor. Right?
Yeah. So there there's a blog post about that that we can put in the show notes.
Yep.
Where I went into like diving into Cursor and just saying, hey, what's the best way to use this thing? And kind of being surprised at a lot of the details of the implementation, things like how Cursor really wants to be the backing implementation of a Cursor adapter in a list view. What it does is it keeps a scrolling window of, or it will keep a window of loaded data from the database, and the every time that it loads more data, it will keep some of the data that it's already seen behind it, and only load like say 2/3 of its window forward. And that's because people might scroll upwards, which is a really weird implementation detail to leak all the way down into the database loading API. This actually became configurable in P, and so we can avoid this though entirely by using individual queries, individual small queries. If you're using individual small queries to load as your paginated source, you can basically avoid a lot of little interesting quirks of Cursor.
Which is presumably what you're doing in the paging library,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
Because you fixed it in the platform, but that is only on the P release.
Actually, we cannot even fully fix it in the platform. So there's this one fundamental problem with paging. Let's say you are loading 100 items. So you only loaded the first 20 items. And now when you load the second page, you say, okay, the same items start from 21 till 40. But what happens if the data change between these two requests? So maybe your top five friends just unfriended you. And now at this point, previously the position you were thinking 21 is actually not 21 anymore. It's at 16.
Yeah.
And like these changes can be arbitrary, and the Cursor API simply like, well, I'm sorry, I have no idea what happened. I was expecting friends. I didn't find any friends. Let me crash. So that's what happens with Cursor, because it has no idea that the actual data source, the database, changed, versus I think it's different in paging.
Yeah, so Cursor is basically a best effort, let me try the simple approach and hope that it works. And in paging, because we integrate directly into Room's invalidation system, we know when the data has changed and whether we've loaded data that is inconsistent. So we can completely avoid the category of problem by hooking into Room's like proprietary invalidation logic on Room side, and then whenever content changes, we can be sure that we aren't presenting together data from before the change and after the change.
Okay, so if developers want the most optimal data paging experience on Android, they should use
the paging library.
Paging library, which uses Room under the hood, or they're using paging library in conjunction
room
with Room.
Room supports paging.
Room supports paging. Use the paging library, and this is specific to RecyclerView.
This is primarily specific to RecyclerView. So one of the things that we added as part of the paging library is this this adapter that will handle diffing for you.
Yeah.
And we also added a version for plain lists in case you don't need paging, but you still like this utility of basically when new content comes over from this observable source, you stick a new list in there. Now, you can just use notify dataset changed and have terrible performance and still like maybe get some okay animations if you have stable IDs, but like that's not a great solution. Instead, if you just implement this diff callback API that's just a couple of really simple methods, you can get all of the benefits of diffutil with its like complex comparison of different lists, detecting when something has moved, changed, whatever, and automatically feed all of that into RecyclerView and trigger animations. So not only do you get pagination, but the important thing that you also get is a streaming pagination source. So like say you have those friends randomly at different places in your database getting deleted. Well, in the cursor world, you'd have to do some really gross things to try and figure out, okay, well, something changed. Let me try and just make a best guess and figure out those changes. With paging, it's all done for you automatically as long as you implement these two simple methods.
So it's able to understand when you get a new version of the list because something has changed. Yep. It's able to figure out where it was compared to the old list and reposition RecyclerView in the right location.
Yes, and it does the like minimal amount of work on the UI thread possible. So it minimizes all of the like UI changes that happen inside of RecyclerView, and it also does all of the diffing on a background thread so that you don't have to, so that in case your lists are incredibly long, you don't have to do any of that work.
Just said one thing, you don't have to use Room to use paging.
Okay.
We just designed them together, and
yes.
So your actual data source can be network, can be another persistent system.
So Room might have its feelings hurt, but other than that, it's okay. You are allowed
Room,
to use
Room is a grown-up. I was actually a year
should
old
be
library.
By now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think like Room years to human years are probably like 12 or 15.
I'll look into that. I really don't know how it's calculated.
Okay.
One important thing to say as well is that it doesn't just support Room or network. It can support both at the same time. So if you are trying to support the offline use case where you can still show your user data, allow them to make queries, allow them to poke around, a database is a great solution for handling all of that. And paging also provides hooks to signal your network when the database is out of data. So as you're scrolling through a list, it'll say, hey, all the data that you have on the database, I've run out. And so you can trigger a network load. It'll add the data to the database, and then that'll all, you know, flow naturally, automatically, without you having to do anything, just as long as you store it in the database. And we have samples for this. We have samples for network. We have samples for Room.
Okay. So we talked about paging overall. Most of that functionality was in the paging library that came out of, what, I.O.?
It actually came...
2018. Oh, wait.
No. It came out... So it was... paging was sort of an interesting release where, unlike all the other architecture components, it didn't come out at an I.O.
Oh, okay.
It just had an alpha that went on for a while. It went 1.0 at I.O., though, at I.O. 2018.
And then in the meantime, you've been working on paging 2.0. Did you want to say, like, what have... The stuff that you talked about is specific to the new stuff.
No, none of that's new stuff. New stuff is just...
So tell me about 2.0 then.
Oh, so 2.0 is just the Android X conversion over to the Android X namespace.
So name change.
Yes.
Okay.
So similar to Lifecycle in Room, it is 2.0 now because it is targeting all the Android X RecyclerView APIs and, you know, testing API and whatever.
So when you make the change, you, the people listening developing Android apps, when you make the change to Android X... Everything in this is in the new space, new namespace, including paging.
I mean, we have important stuff in 2.1, though, right?
We have some important stuff coming up in 2.1.
The real 2 is 2.1.
Yeah, the real 2 is 2.1. Yeah, there are no new features in 2.0. There are no API changes except for package rename. 2.1, we've got some interesting stuff coming down the pipe. We've got Kotlin extension functions for all of our builders. So instead of using any of the Java builders, you can just use Kotlin extension functions with like optional parameters and all that stuff is just nice and more convenient. We've also got support for page dropping.
Page dropping is like a rap term, isn't it?
No idea. I haven't heard it used that way.
I would like it to be.
Oh, okay.
Okay,
well,
and now it is.
Okay, all right. Well, I guess that's how that decision process goes. So page dropping occurs when you say, I do want to page content in, but I also want to page content out. I want a certain maximum size. And currently paging just keeps everything in memory because... generally, you don't actually need this in a lot of cases. One of the things that's... Because we're observing a streamable source... So like when the database gets invalidated, we don't reload everything that we've paged in because that would be expensive. Instead, we just reload content around where the recycler view is. So every time that you get a new update from the database, you already are dropping pages. However, if you have something that's less dynamic than that, then page dropping can be useful. Or if you just want to make it completely strict, this is the maximum number of items that I can have loaded, you can do that now with page dropping.
Okay, yeah. So time frame for 2.1? We don't normally talk about future development,
yeah,
so...
This is fine. Maybe by the time we ship this, maybe we already have it, but...
So yeah, sometime soon.
We will try to do a 2.1 alpha. So we do these alpha releases as early as possible.
Okay.
And we will do it soon.
And there must be like a paging overview site on the...
Yes. Yeah, it's
d.android.com.
On the android.com / arch.
Okay.
Find all
so we'll link to that, so keep an eye on that page for updates. Anything else we didn't get to?
Wow, we got
the
whole history of Android.
I think we're done.
All right.
All right. Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you.